Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the big bad wolf.
Show everybody, how's it going out there in internet radio land? This is the Christo Radio Show, the Chef Christo Radio Show. We're coming to you live from New York City, but you're sitting there in your living room, in your cars, or wherever it is you listen to internet radio. Hopefully, everywhere. It's part of the Brilliant Ideas Radio Network, and we need listeners, and that's where you come in, people. Anyway, got an exciting show today. We've taken a little bit of a break here at Blog Talk Radio, Brilliant Ideas Radio. We've been out enjoying the summer. Hopefully, we've all been doing that. I know that here at Christo Land, Shea What, we've been doing some much-needed renovations and things like that. So that's always a good thing. Get ready for guests coming for the summer and all that sort of thing. So if you're a big fan of puttering and working around the house, you would love to be over here right now. Myself, not a big fan of that sort of thing. I'm a big fan of sitting on the couch. I'm a big fan of eating. I think we're all big fans of eating. Anyway, we've got no guest today, everybody. I'm your guest. Isn't that exciting? I'm going to do a little question and answer series with me. I'm going to ask myself questions and then feel stumped and then try to come up with answers for them. No, I'm not going to do that. No, we're just going to talk about some things. I usually do a little bit of a segment in the beginning of the show where I talk about what's fresh and what's in season right now, and I do a little bit of a gotta feed the kid thing where I tell you what I'm feeding my kid lately. But since we have a whole show today to cover a lot of that stuff, we're just going to talk about all sorts of things. We're going to talk about what's seasonal. I know a lot of people have gardens out there, so your gardens are probably in full swing right now, unless you live in some of the more southern states like Florida. I think Florida's growing season is considerably different than what we have up here in New York City and in the northern areas like Vermont and Connecticut and those areas. So I know that we get probably, I know I see tomatoes in February coming from Florida, and I'm all getting all excited and kind of, you know, bummed about it. But then midsummer rolls around when we're having our tomatoes, and they're all done. I think it's just too hot. So that's always a very interesting thing. If you're a foodie, and a lot of people are foodies now, I think everybody's a foodie, it's important to try to learn and understand what's seasonal. And everyone thinks, you know, it's this big locavore movement that you got to, you know, your people need you, and you need to support your local farmers and things like that. But local, for me, as a citizen of the United States of America, is food that comes from this country. So I'm not going to not eat strawberries because they're not growing in New Jersey right now, which is just the next state over. If they're happening in Florida in the middle of February, why not have them? You know, a lot of gray area with a lot of that stuff. I don't understand a lot of it. I don't try to understand a lot of it. I don't try to get involved in any of it, because there's always going to be an argument. There's always going to be somebody out there that knows more or thinks that they know more, so they're going to want to tell you about how much they know. And when it comes to things like movements, there's always the fanatics, and I'm not ever much of that kind of a fanatic, so I try to shy away from making a stance on that one way or the other, whether, you know, whether I eat a spotted pig from a small farm in New Hampshire, or if I just eat pork from the grocery store. You know, it's, try not to get too involved in a lot of that stuff. And a lot of people do, and it's important. And it's important to support our local farmers. Anyway, isn't this going to be fun? It's going to be just me cracking myself up already. All right, so I asked people on Facebook last night to give me some ideas on what to talk about, and boy, the just suggestions just came flying in like mad. I can't even sort through all three of them, so I'll see if I can address those for you today. I know we had one listener from Texas. I don't know if people want to be named, so I won't name them, but I'll name their locale, I guess, from Texas. She wanted to know how to cook a red snapper. Now, red snapper is a really delicious fish, and it's very popular in restaurants, and it's very popular in Gulf areas. In Mexico, they call it the huachinango. It's just a beautiful red fish, and when the snapper are running, people get excited, fishermen, sport fishermen, and people who love fishing for, you know, to eat the fish as well, just love it when the snapper are running. Snapper's great. They can get very big. They can become a very large fish. So depending upon the size of your fish, I think would depend upon how you cook it. I guess if it's a very large snapper, you're not going to have an oven big enough for some of the larger ones. So I don't know. I wouldn't know what to tell you. That. I guess fillet it. But a whole snapper. And she was concerned about the eyes. And that's always a big concern with a lot of people with eating things like a whole fish or lobsters or things like that, that people determine have these little faces and these cute little eyes that are looking at them. There's ways around that. You can just put a slice of lemon over it. You know, if you're the cook, you're going to have to see these eyes at some point. So either have somebody come in and put the slice of lemon over the eye for you, or however you can manage that, but a slice of lemon or some herbs or just something over it if you need to really cover the eye. Delicious way to cook this fish is caked in salt. And it gives you such a moist and delicious result when you're done. We did some branzino this way for work the other day. We did dozens of them. So what you do is you take regular kosher salt. You're going to need a box or so, depending upon your fish. Say if your fish is 3 pounds or so. That might be what, maybe a 12 or 14 inch fish. It depends on how plump it is. But let's just go by inches on this fish, and we won't worry about pounds so much. So if you've got a fish that's probably about a foot long, it's going to be probably, if it's a snapper, 4 to 6 inches wide. You're going to need probably 1 to 2 pounds of salt. So you're going to take your salt, and you're going to mix it with egg white. So for 1 to 2 pounds of salt, you're going to need probably about 2 to maybe 3 egg whites. And then you mix that together with your salt. You've got your cleaned and scaled fish. You can have your fishmonger do that for you, unless you caught them yourself. Caught them yourself, and you're going to need to clean them and scale them. It's optional if you want to cut the fins off or not, but you can do that with scissors. Now, the snapper has a pretty spiny little back fin, and the fins are pretty rigid and pretty spiny. So just take a good, strong pair of kitchen shears and just snip those right off. And then if you would like to have additional flavors inside, put some little herbs in there, whatever you like, stuff fresh from your garden if you have it. I've been on an oregano kick lately because I'm growing a lot of oregano in my garden, and a lot of basil also, but oregano is my main buddy lately, so I'm putting that in everything. Put some herbs in there, maybe some sliced onion, a few little slices of lemon, real thinly sliced. Put that inside the cavity where you clean the fish, and then lay it down in your baking pan, and then just completely cover it with salt. So you have probably a half inch or so of salt over the entire fish. It's just now one solid salt block. Put that in the oven. Probably it's going to take 25 minutes or so at 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Bring it out. Let it rest for a minute. If you have a thermometer and you want to check, you want to make sure the internal temperature is above 145. That's the safe zone. Fish like this, it's very soft and very tender. It doesn't need to be cooked to a well-done, like a steak temperature, like 160, 165 up in there. It's going to start to dry it out, be too much. And you have salt, so that will dry it out even more. So get it to about 145 or so, 150. Let it cool so you can manage it. And then just gently and carefully remove the salt. It's going to be now a hard cake. It won't be soft like it was before from the egg white. It's going to be now, you'll be able to take it off in like pieces, like little shale, like bricks. So you remove the salt. And if you want to have that for presentation, remove the fish from the baking pan and put it on a platter, and then remove the salt and let the salt sort of just sit around it as part of your presentation and your decoration. You can put a few more slices of lemon and lime around that if you want to enhance that look. And then simply just serve it by taking a thin blade knife and going along the top spine, slicing downward, and you'll have an entire fillet will lift right up. You can just serve it just like that. You could slice it vertically down so you can have 1 to 2 inch pieces, as if you were going to, say, cut the whole fish into, like, say, fish steaks, like how you see salmon cut up in the grocery store into fish steaks. But you can do that, just little sections like that. And I'm telling you, it's the best tasting fish you'll ever have. You've dealt with the eye-head problem. You just don't remove the salt from the head area. Just leave it on there. You don't have to look at it. It's done. And that's a nice, delicious way to make a fish. It's presentation-wise, it looks really cool. Your guests are going to think it's so cool that you did a salt-caked fish. It's also good with chicken if you want to do that, if you're in the mood for making a lot of things with salt. So there's a nice suggestion there for our listener in Texas for your red snapper. I hope you try it. If you do try it, let me know. Show us some pictures. If you have any more questions, you can just find me there on Facebook or or find my email somehow, or I'm not going to say it out loud. I don't know if I want to. I get too much oddball email as it is. I think a lot of people have my email anyway. So if you know my email, or if you know me on Facebook, you can just find me right there. Now, we've also had another listener ask about fruits and telling me what seasonal things. I think she mentioned figs. And figs are in season right now. They're starting to become in season here in the Northeast a little bit. Some of the fig trees. We have a fig tree in the garden, and it's starting to show little figlets at this point, but they're not quite ready yet. But there's a fun thing that I like to do with the figs, and it's also with the fig leaves. I take a fig leaf, and I'll take some ripe figs, and I'll take some goat cheese, and I'll take a little tiny, well, the fig leaves are very large, so you could use an entire fig leaf if you like, or just get some of the smaller fig leaves. I take the smaller fig leaves, and I take a little knob of goat cheese, and I set that on the fig leaf. And then I'll take some figs, and I'll slice them round-wise, not vertically, not straight down, but I guess on the horizontal, so that you have discs. And I'll put those round slices of figs on both sides of the goat cheese, on the top and on the bottom, in the fig leaf. And then I wrap the fig leaf up really nice, tight, like a little package, and I put that on the grill. And I put that on a hot grill for 5 minutes or less or so, just so you can sort of see it steaming and bubbling. Take it off the grill, depending on how big you made them. If you made a big one, open up the large one and just have it sit there and let people eat it with pita chips or with crackers or just like that. With, you know, you could dip some vegetable in there, a little crudite. Or if you made little individual ones, you can put those on a plate and have some grilled fig leaf goat cheese with figs. It's so tasty. Grilled figs are really good. Grilled figs are delicious. So that's easy. You just slice the figs and just grill them and serve them just like that. I've got a big event coming up, and I'm going to do some grilled figs with a black currant syrup. So I just make a little syrup out of some black currants, and I grill the figs, and then I set the fig down. For the presentation on this one, I slice off the bottom so it doesn't wiggle around and it sits real nice and straight up. And then I cut it twice across the top so it sort of opens up like a little star. And then I drizzle just a little bit of that blackcurrant syrup over the fig. And then I take a little bit of creme fraiche, just a tiny little bit, and I just kind of squirt that right in the middle with a little piping bag. And then I take a chiffonade of mint. Chiffonade is a cooking term for a berry slice. You do that with herbs a lot. So off on a tangent here. Here's how to chiffonade really easily. Let's do a basil leaf, for example. You take a basil leaf, two or three or four of them, and you roll them up. Like, say, if you were making a cigar. So you roll them into like a tube, and you've got them rolled into this tube, and then you take your knife, very sharp knife, because you don't want to push down on the herb, you want to slice clean through it, and then you just gently and quickly rock the blade back and forth on your cutting board against these herbs, and you get a fine little ribbon. Try to do it as fine as you can. You can make them as fine as you want. Finer the better, not too fine, or they'll turn into a paste. So there's a fine line between how fine they are. So that's a chiffonade. You just walk the knife back and forth, and you have these little ribbons of your herb. So you take a little bit of that chiffonade and just put a couple, three or four little leaves or ribbons of that mint on top of your grilled fig with your black currant and creme fraiche, and serve it just like that. You've now made simple ingredients, and you've kicked them up a notch, and they're just, it's just so tasty. So there's a big thing. You've done red snapper. Grilling tips. I don't have a lot of grilling tips. I guess I could have some grilling tips for you. Grilling is always something that depends on what's going on at the time. That's when you're going to need the tip. You know, for the most part, you just want a nice hot grill. You're going to take your steak. You're going to sear your steak on one side, get some nice grill marks. You're going to flip it over. You're going to cook the other side of it. And there you're done. You know, hot dogs, you can tell when a hot dog's done. I think grilling tips and grilling is, it's going to have to be a whole other show. We're going to have to just talk about grilling things and a variety of things and not just talk about how, when your steak is done. And it's popular, and doneness is an important topic. A lot of people don't know when it's done. They may not have a thermometer. You know, people just like to visualize that sort of thing. I think when you're standing outside drinking your cold drinks and you're cooking up some steaks and some burgers and some hot dogs for your friends and family, I don't think you want to sit around with all these thermometers and gadgets and stuff, though some people do. So we'll do an entire show on doneness of things, steaks and burgers and chicken and what those temperatures might be. But just a hot grill. Keep it hot. You've got a big grill, have one side hot, have the other side at a lower temperature so you can warm things. Sometimes direct heat is good. Sometimes indirect heat is good. Just do a whole show on pizzas. I do pizza on the grill. Just get a pizza stone. My grill gets really hot, so I can do that. So pizzas on the grill would be a good one. We had another suggestion from a listener in Maryland. I'm trying to find that one now. What did she ask me about? Let me find that here for you guys. Give me a quick second. I guess I should have been already on that. Oh, a Mako shark steak. Somebody she knew went off fishing and caught some shark. When I read that, the very first thing that popped into my mind was to cut it into like how you would make chicken fingers. Because shark is a very dense fish, and it can have sort of a strong flavor. So if you have a big piece of it, it's just going to be too, it's just very rich. It's like the density of beef, of steak. It's that, it can be that dense and that thick and that strong. So I would cut it into 1 inch by, say, 4 inch fish sticks, like a little fish stick, and bread them up, dip them in like a tempura batter, and fry them until they're golden. You know, season them with salt and pepper, of course, first before you do all that. And then fry them, you know, dip them in your tempura batter. If you wanted to enhance that batter, add some red chili powder or add some Old Bay seasoning mix. If you do that, cut back on the salt and pepper on the fish itself because Old Bay is very salty. And dip them in that batter and fry them up and make some fish tacos or make yourself a fish sandwich. You could do that. If you wanted to bake the fish lightly in the oven and then remove it, let it cool and crumble it up and make it with your favorite crab cake mix recipe. People from Maryland is the home of crab cakes, some of the best crab, the blue crab is from that area. You can then take that semi-cooked shark that's been flaked up and then mix it into some crab cake mix and make some shark cakes. That would be really good. But I definitely recommend the fish sandwich, fish stick, fish taco combo. Once you have them, those little fish sticks fried up, you could do a lot of things with them. You could have them with just plain, have a little coleslaw, eat them just like that, use that same coleslaw in a taco, have a toasted bun, have them on a sandwich. The sky's the limit. But once again, it's a very it's a very dense fish, so you may not want to have a big fillet of it, or you might find that just big pieces of it is just a little strong and a little. It's not too fishy. I don't know how to explain it really. It's just a dense fish. So there's our suggestions there on the shark. We've got the red snapper. We didn't get any other suggestions in. Myself, I've been making a lot of what's called chilaquiles here at home. I make a lot of Southwestern and Mexican food for myself at home, since that is my culture and my roots. And I've been living here in New York City for a good number of years, but I think about New Mexico probably every single day. And people ask me all the time, why don't I move back? And I would love to move back. But I'm just so addicted and so enamored with New York that it's hard for me to do that. And people who have visited here wonder sometimes how a person could want to live in New York. But I think it's the very same things that people are freaked out about or don't like about it are the very same things that grow on you when you're here. It's the hustle, the bustle, the noise, everything about it. It's just the polar opposite of where I'm from. I'm from a small farming community. So it's the opposite, and I just love it here. But I also miss New Mexico. So chilaquiles are quite an easy thing to make. You guys can make them out there yourself. You just get some corn tortillas. If you've ever made corn tortilla chips, if you haven't, you should. It's far better than those chips in the bag. The chips in the bag are made out of a processed cornmeal that's a little more crunchy. And it's still good. But the that you make yourself out of the tortilla is a little more dense. It's a little chewier, a little crispier, a little chewier. So you fry up the corn tortillas, cut them into little triangles. You can probably get about six or so chips from one tortilla. So what I like to do is I cut them in half, take those two half moons, stack them on top of each other, and then cut them into three little sections of triangles at that point. I've got a nice stack of chips. I've got my hot oil, drop the chips in the oil, fry them until they're crispy, remove them, salt them up. At this point, you've got your salsas warming up. If you don't know how to make a salsa, that's going to have to be another show. There's plenty of salsas available out there. You don't want the ones that are like pico de gallo for this. You want a smoother salsa, something like an adobo sauce sort of thing. So if you see those in your grocer, get one of those, heat it up, add a little more water to it or broth, get some more liquid, drop your chips in there, let them soak. They're going to now absorb a lot of that liquid and become less crispy. They're not going to get soggy. They're just going to become a little more chewy. Take those out, put them on your plate, cover them with some fresh beans if you've got those. A lot of people like to do a fried egg on top. Garnish it with a little bit of cilantro and green onion. Hit it with some cotija cheese. And there you've got a simple, delightful Mexican delight, chilaquiles. Anytime you get out there to any of those beach communities, if you travel in Mexico or if you just happen to travel into some of the inland areas, popular dish in Mexico, very popular. It's a fantastic way that they use up old corn tortillas. So there you go, everybody. A little bit of Cristo for you here today. That's my blog. If you want to look it up, www.alittlebitofcristo.blogspot.com. We're back. Blogspot Radio and Great Ideas Radio is back from the hiatus. Things that sound dirty that aren't. Hiatus. Anyway, everybody, thanks for listening. We're going to have some exciting guests next week and the weeks to come. There's other Brilliant Ideas Radio shows on air. Stay tuned. You'll see links on my Facebook. You'll see links on Brilliant Ideas to those. Please listen in. Bye. Oh,
Philadelphia egg and... Just when you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.